and his wife and two of his children. It was early in the morning. He was on his way back from a party, drunk. They were on their way to market. It was harvest time, and they couldn't work the fields, and they lost their whole crop.
Cantaloupe?
Bell peppers, actually, rotted on the vine. We sued and won $20,000, but the guy won't pay. He just refuses. He's waiting them out. He plans to starve them back to Mexico, and he will. Because if we have to go back to court, it'll take at least another year, and they can't live another whole year on fresh air. Can they?
They didn't have insurance?
Premiums are way too expensive. These people are barely scratching a living. All we could do was proceed directly against the rancher. Solid case, well presented, and we won. But the old guy is sitting tight, with a big smirk on his damn face.
Tough break, Reacher said.
Unbelievable, she said. The things these people go through, you just wouldn't believe it. This family I'm telling you about, the Border Patrol killed their eldest son.
They did?
She nodded. 12 years ago, they were illegals. Paid their life savings to some guy to get them here, and he just abandoned them in the desert. No food, no water. They're holing up in the daytime and walking north at night. And a patrol chases them in the dark with rifles and kills their eldest boy. They bury him and walk on.
Anything get done about it?
Are you kidding? They were illegals. They couldn't do anything. It happened all the time. Everybody's got a story like that. And now they're settled and been through the immigration amnesty. We try to get them to trust the law. And then something like this happens. I feel like such a fool.
Not your fault.
It is my fault. I should know better. Trust us, I tell them.
She went quiet, and Reacher watched her try to recover.
Anyway,
she said, and then nothing more. She looked away. She was a good-looking woman. It was very hot. There was a single air conditioner stuck in the fanlight over the door, a big old thing, a long way away. It was doing its best.
Anyway,
she said again, looked at him.
How can I help you?
Not me, Reacher said. A woman I know.
She needs a lawyer?
She shot her husband. He was abusing her.
When?
Last night. She's across the street in jail.
Is he dead?
Reacher nodded. As a doornail.
Her shoulders sagged. She opened a drawer and took out a yellow pad.
What's your name?
She asked. My name? You're the one talking to me.
Reacher, he said.
What's your name?
She wrote Reacher on the pad, first line.
Alice, she said. Alice Amanda Aaron.
You should go into private practice. You'd be first in the yellow pages.
She smiled, just a little.
One day I will, she said. This is a 5-year bargain with my conscience.
Paying your dues?
Atoning,
she said.
For my good fortune. For going to Harvard Law. For coming from a family where $20,000 is a month's common charge on the Park Avenue Co-op instead of life or death during the winter in Texas.
Good for you, Alice, he said.
So tell me about your woman friend.
She's of Mexican heritage, and her husband was white. Her name is Carmen Greer, and her husband was Sloop Greer.
Sloop?
Like a boat.
Okay,
Alice said, and wrote it all down. The abuse stopped for the last year and a half because he was in prison for tax evasion. He got out yesterday and started it up again. And she shot him. Okay.
Evidence and witnesses are going to be hard to find. The abuse was covert.
Injuries?
Fairly severe, but she always passed them off as accidental, to do with horses.
Horses?
Like she fell off of them?
Why?
Reacher shrugged. I don't know. Family dynamic, coercion, shame, fear, embarrassment, maybe.
But there's no doubt the abuse happened.
Not in my mind. Alice stopped writing, stared down at the yellow paper.
Well, it's not going to be easy, she said. Texas law isn't too far behind the times on spousal abuse, but I'd prefer lots of clear evidence. But his spell in prison helps us. Not a model citizen, is he? We could plead it down to involuntary manslaughter, maybe settle for time served with probation. If we work hard, we stand a chance.
It was justifiable homicide, not manslaughter.
I'm sure it was, but it's a question of what will work and what won't.
And she needs bail, Reacher said. Today. Alice looked up from the paper and stared at him.
Bail?
She repeated, like it was a foreign word.
Today? Forget about it.
She's got a kid. A little girl, 6 and a half. She wrote it down.
Doesn't help,
she said.
Everybody's got kids.
She ran her fingers up and down the tall stacks of files.
They've all got kids,
she said again.
6 and a half, 1 and a half, 2 kids, 6, 7, 10.
She's called Ellie, Reacher said. She needs her mother. Alice wrote Ellie on the pad and connected it with an arrow to Carmen Greer.
Only 2 ways to get bail in a case like this, she said. First way is we stage essentially the whole trial at the bail hearing, and we're not ready to do that. It'll be months before I can even start working on it. My calendar is totally full. And even when I can start, it'll take months to prepare in these circumstances.
What circumstances?
Her word against a dead man's reputation. If we've got no eyewitnesses, we'll have to subpoena her medical records and find experts who can testify her injuries weren't caused by falling off horses. And clearly she's got no money or you wouldn't be in here on her behalf, so we're going to have to find some experts who'll appear for free, which isn't impossible, but it can't be done in a hurry.
So what can be done in a hurry?
I can run over to the jail and say, hi, I'm your lawyer, I'll see you again in a year. That's about all can be done in a hurry.
Reacher glanced around the room. It was teeming with people.
Nobody else will be faster, Alice said. I'm relatively new here. I've got less of a backlog.
It seemed to be true. She had just 2 head-high stacks of files on her desk. The others all had 3 or 4 or 5. What's the second way?
Of what?
Getting bail. You said there were 2 ways. She nodded.
Second way is we convince the DA not to oppose it. If we stand up and ask for bail and he stands up and says he has no objection, then all that matters is whether the judge thinks it's appropriate. And the judge will be influenced by the DA's position, probably.
Hack Walker was Sloop Greer's oldest buddy. Alice's shoulders sagged again.
Oh, great,
she said.
He'll recuse himself, obviously, but his staff will go to bat for him. So forget bail. It isn't going to happen.
But will you take the case?
Sure I will. That's what we do here. We take cases. So I'll call Hack's office and I'll go see Carmen. But that's all I can do right now. You understand? Apart from that, right now, taking the case is the same thing as not taking the case.
Reacher sat still for a second, then he shook his head.
Not good enough, Alice, he said. I want you to get to work right now. Make something happen.
I can't, she said. Not for months. I told you that.
She went quiet, and he watched her for a second more.
You interested in a deal? He asked.
A deal?
Like I help you, you help me?
How can you help me?
There are things I could do for you. Like, I could recover the 20 grand for your pepper growers today, and then you could start work for Carmen Greer today.
What are you, a debt collector?
No, but I'm a quick learner. It's probably not rocket science.
I can't let you do that. It's probably illegal, unless you're registered somewhere.
Just suppose the next time you saw me, I was walking back in here with a check for 20 grand in my pocket.
How would you do that?
He shrugged. I'd just go ask the guy for it.
And that would work.
It might, he said. She shook her head.
It would be unethical.
As opposed to what? She didn't answer for a long time, just stared off somewhere behind his head. But then he saw her glance down at the phone. He saw her rehearsing the good news call in her mind.
Who's the rancher? He asked.
She glanced at the drawer, shook her head again.
I can't tell you, she said. I'm worried about the ethics.
I'm offering, he said. You're not asking. She sat still. I'm volunteering, he said, like a paralegal assistant. She looked straight at him.
I have to go to the bathroom, she said.
She stood up suddenly and walked away. She was wearing denim shorts, and she was taller than he had guessed. Short shorts, long legs, a fine tan. Walking, she looked pretty good from the back. She went through a door in the rear wall of the old store. He stood up and leaned over the desk and pulled open the drawer, lifted the top file out and reversed it so he could read it. It was full of legal paper. He shuffled through to some kind of a deposition printed on a single sheet. There was a name and address typed neatly in a box labeled Defendant. He folded the paper into quarters and put it in his shirt pocket, closed the file, and dropped it back in the drawer, hooked the drawer shut and sat down again. A moment later, Alice Amanda Aaron came out through the rear door and walked back to the desk. She looked pretty good from the front, too.
Any place around here I can borrow a car? He asked her.
You don't have one.
He shook his head.
Well, you can borrow mine, I guess, she said. It's in the lot, behind the building.
She fiddled in her jacket pocket behind her, came out with a set of keys.
It's a VW, she said.
He took the keys from her.
There are maps in the glove compartment, she said. You know, in case a person isn't familiar with the area.
He pushed back from the desk.
Maybe I'll catch you later, he said.
She said nothing. He stood up and walked through the quiet crowd of people and out into the sun.
11. Alice's car was the only VW in the lot behind the building. It was baking in the sun right in the center. A new shape Beetle, bright yellow in color. New York plates, about a year and a half old. And there was more than a bunch of maps in the glove compartment. There was a handgun in there, too. It was a beautiful, nickel-finished Heckler & Koch P7M10, 4-inch barrel, 10 .40-caliber shells. In Reacher's day, the Army had wanted the same thing in the 9mm blued steel version, but the Defense Department had balked at the cost, which must have been about 16 times the price of Carmen Greer's $80 Lorsen. It was a fine, fine piece, one of the best available. Maybe it was a gift from the family, back on Park Avenue. Maybe the car was, too. He could just imagine it. The VW was an easy choice, the perfect graduation present. But the gun might have caused some consternation. The parents would have been sitting up there on their high floor in New York, worrying about it. She's going to work where? With poor people? She'll need protection, surely. So they would have researched the whole matter thoroughly and gone out and bought her the best on the market, like they would have bought her a Rolex if she had needed a watch. Out of habit, he took it apart, then checked the action and reassembled it. It was new, but it had been fired and cleaned maybe 4 or 5 times. It spoke of conscientious hours put in at the practice range. Maybe some exclusive Manhattan basement. He smiled, slotted it back in the glove compartment under the maps. Then he racked the seat all the way back and fiddled with the key and fired the engine up and started the air running. He took the maps out of the glove compartment and spread them on the empty seat beside him. Took the folded paper from his shirt pocket and checked the maps for the rancher's address. It seemed to be somewhere north and east of town, maybe an hour away if he hustled hard. The VW had a manual transmission with a sharp clutch, and he stalled out twice before he got the hang of driving it. He felt awkward and conspicuous. The ride was firm, and there was some kind of a bud vase attached to the dash, loaded with a little pink bloom that was reviving steadily as the car got colder. There was subtle perfume in the air. He had learned to drive nearly 25 years before, underage and illegally, in a Marine Corps deuce and a half with the driving seat 6 feet off the ground, and he felt about as far away from that experience as it was possible to get. The map showed 7 ways out of Pecos. He had come in on the southernmost, and it didn't have what he was looking for, so he had 6 to cover. His instinct led him west. The town's center of gravity seemed to be lumped to the east of the crossroads, therefore east would be definitely wrong. So he drove away from the lawyers and the bondsmen in the direction of El Paso and followed a slight right-hand curve and found exactly what he wanted, all spread out in front of him and receding into the distance. Every town of any size as a strip of auto dealers clustered together on one of the approaches, and Pecos was no different. He cruised up the strip and turned around and cruised back, looking for the right kind of place. There were 2 possibilities. Both of them had gaudy signs offering foreign car service. Both of them offered free loaners. He chose the place farther out of town. It had a used car business in front, with a dozen clunkers decked with flags and low prices on their windshields. An office in a trailer. Behind the sales lot was a long, low shed with hydraulic hoists. The floor of the shed was oil-stained earth. There were 4 mechanics visible. One of them was halfway underneath a British sports car. The other 3 were unoccupied. A slow start to a hot Monday morning. He drove the yellow VW right into the shed. The 3 unoccupied mechanics drifted over to it. One of them looked like a foreman. Reacher asked him to adjust the VW's clutch so its action would be softer. The guy looked happy to be offered the work. He said it would cost $40. Reacher agreed to the price and asked for a loaner. The guy led him behind the shed and pointed to an ancient Chrysler LeBaron convertible. It had been white once, but now it was khaki, with age and sunlight. Reacher took Alice's gun with him,
wrapped up in her maps like a store-bought package. He placed it on the Chrysler's passenger seat. Then he asked the mechanic for a tow rope.
"What you want to tow?" the guy asked.
"Nothing," Reacher said. "I just want the rope, is all."
"You want a rope, but you don't want to tow anything."
"You got it," Reacher said. The guy shrugged and walked away, came back with a coil of rope. Reacher put it in the passenger footwell. Then he drove the LeBaron back into town and out again, heading north and east, feeling a whole lot better about the day. Only a fool would try unlicensed debt collecting in the wilds of Texas in a bright yellow car with New York plates and a bud vase on the dash. He stopped once in empty country to unscrew the Chrysler's plates with a penny from his pocket. He stored them on the floor on the passenger's side next to the coil of rope, put the bolts in the glove compartment. Then he drove on looking for his destination. He was maybe 3 hours north of the Greer place, and the land looked pretty much the same, except it was better irrigated. Grass was growing. The mesquite had been burned back. There were cultivated acres with green bushes all over them. Peppers, maybe. Or cantaloupe. He had no idea. There was wild indigo on the shoulders of the road. An occasional prickly pear. No people. The sun was high, and the horizons were shimmering. The rancher's name was listed on the legal paper as Lyndon J. Brewer. His address was just a route number, which Alice's map showed was a stretch of road that ran about 40 miles before it disappeared into New Mexico. It was the same sort of road as the drag heading south out of Echo down to the Greer place, a dusty blacktop ribbon and a string of drooping power lines punctuated by big ranch gates about every 15 miles. The ranches had names, which weren't necessarily going to be the names of the owners, like the Red House had nowhere been labeled Greer. So finding Lyndon J. Brewer in person wasn't necessarily going to be easy. But then it was, because the road was crossed by another, and the resulting crossroads had a line of mailboxes laid out along a gray-weathered plank, and the mailboxes had people's names and ranch names on them together. Brewer was painted freehand in black on a white box, and Big Hat Ranch was painted right below it. He found the entrance to the Big Hat Ranch 15 miles to the north. There was a fancy iron arch, painted white, like something you might see holding up a conservatory roof in Charleston or New Orleans. He drove right past it and stopped on the shoulder of the road at the foot of the next power line pole, got out of the car, and looked straight up. There was a big transformer can at the top of the pole where the line split off in a T and ran away at a right angle toward where the ranch house must be. And, looping parallel all the way, about a foot lower down, the telephone line ran with it. He took Alice's gun from under the maps on the passenger seat and the rope from the footwell, tied one end of the rope into the trigger guard with a single neat knot, passed 20 feet of rope through his hands, and swung the gun like a weight. Then he clamped the rope with his left hand and threw the gun with his right, aiming to slot it between the phone line and the electricity supply above it. The first time, he missed. The gun fell about a foot short, and he caught it coming down. The second time, he threw a little harder and hit it just right. The gun sailed through the gap and fell and snagged the rope over the wire. He played the rope out over his left palm and lowered the gun back down to himself, untied it, and tossed it back into the car, and clamped the looped rope in both hands and pulled sharply. The phone line broke at the junction box and snaked down to the ground, all the way up to the next pole 100 yards away. He coiled the rope again and dropped it back in the footwell, got in the car, and backed up and turned in under the white-painted gate, drove the best part of a mile down a private driveway to a white-painted house that should have been in a historical movie. It had four massive columns at the front, holding up a second-story balcony. There were broad steps leading up to a double front door. There was a tended lawn, a parking area made from raked gravel. He stopped the car on the gravel at the bottom of the steps and shut off the motor, tucked his shirt tight into the waistband of his pants. Some girl who worked as a personal trainer had told him it made his upper body look more triangular. He slipped the gun into his right hip pocket. Its shape showed through nicely. Then he rolled the sleeves of his new shirt all the way up to the shoulders, gripped the LeBaron's wheel, and squeezed until it started to give and the veins in his biceps were standing out, big and obvious. When you've got arms bigger than most people's legs, sometimes you need to exploit what nature has given you. He got out of the car and went up the steps, used a bell he found to the right of the doors, heard a chime somewhere deep inside the mansion. Then he waited. He was about to use the bell again when the left-hand door opened. There was a maid standing there, about half the height of the door. She was dressed in a gray uniform and looked like she came from the Philippines. "I'm here to see Lyndon Brewer," Reacher said.
"Do you have an appointment?"
the maid said. Her English was very good.
"Yes, I do."
"He didn't tell me."
"He probably forgot," Reacher said. "I understand he's a bit of an asshole."
Her face tensed, not with shock. She was fighting a smile.
"Who shall I announce?"
"Rutherford B. Hayes," Reacher said.
The maid paused and then smiled, finally.
"He was the 19th president," she said, "the one after Ulysses S. Grant, born 1822 in Ohio, served from 1877 until 1881, one of seven presidents from Ohio. The middle one of three consecutive."
"He's my ancestor," Reacher said. "I'm from Ohio, too. But I've got no interest in politics. Tell Mr. Brewer I work for a bank in San Antonio, and we just discovered stock in his grandfather's name worth about $1 million.
"He'll be excited about that,"
the maid said. She walked away, and Reacher stepped through the door in time to see her climbing a wide staircase in back of the entrance foyer. She moved neatly, without apparent effort, one hand on the rail all the way. The foyer was the size of a basketball court, and it was hushed and cool, paneled in golden hardwood, polished to a deep luster by generations of maids. There was a grandfather clock, taller than Reacher, ticking softly to itself once a second. An antique chaise like you see society women perched on in oil-painted portraits. Reacher wondered if it would break in the middle if he put his weight on it. He pressed on the velvet with his hand, felt horsehair padding under it. Then the maid came back down the stairs the same way she had gone up, gliding, her body perfectly still and her hand just raising the rail.
"He'll see you now," she said. "He's on the balcony at the back of the house."
There was an upstairs foyer with the same dimensions and the same decor. French doors led out onto the rear balcony, which ran the whole width of the house and looked out over acres of hot grassland. It was roofed, and fans turned lazily near the ceiling. There was heavy wicker furniture painted white and arranged in a group. A man sat in a chair with a small table at his right hand. The table held a pitcher and a glass filled with what looked like lemonade, but it could have been anything. The man was a bull-necked guy of about 60. He was softened and faded from a peak that might have been impressive 20 years ago. He had plenty of white hair and a red face burned into lines and crags by the sun. He was dressed all in white. White pants, white shirt, white shoes. It looked like he was ready to go lawn bowling at some fancy country club.
"Miss Hayes," he called.
Reacher walked over and sat down without waiting for an invitation.
"You got children?" he asked. "I have three sons," Brewer replied. "Any of them at home?" "They're all away, working." "Your wife?"
"She's in Houston, visiting."
"So it's just you and the maid today?"
"Why do you ask?" He was impatient and puzzled, but polite, like people are when you're about to give them $1 million.
"I'm a banker," Reacher said. "I have to ask."
"Tell me about the stock," Brewer said.
"There is no stock. I lied about that."
Brewer looked surprised, then disappointed, then irritated.
"Then why are you here?" he asked.
"It's a technique we use," Reacher said. "I'm really a loan officer. A person needs to borrow money. Maybe he doesn't want his domestic staff to know."
"But I don't need to borrow money, Mr. Hayes."
"You sure about that?"
"Very."
"That's not what we heard."
"I'm a rich man. I lend. I don't borrow."
"Really? We heard you had problems meeting your obligations." Brewer made the connection, slowly. Shock traveled through his body to his face. He stiffened and grew redder and glanced down at the shape of the gun in Reacher's pocket, like he was seeing it for the first time. Then he put his hand down to the table and came back with a small silver bell. He shook it hard, and it made a small tinkling sound.
"Maria!"
he called, shaking the bell.
"Maria!"
The maid came out of the same door Reacher had used. She walked soundlessly along the boards of the balcony.
"Call the police," Brewer ordered. "Dial 911. I want this man arrested."
She hesitated.
"Go ahead," Reacher said.
"Make the call." She ducked past them and into the room directly behind Brewer's chair. It was some kind of a private study, dark and masculine. Reacher heard the sound of a phone being picked up, then the sound of rapid clicking as she tried to make it work.
"The phones are out," she called.
"Go wait downstairs," Reacher called back.
"What do you want?"
Brewer asked.
"I want you to meet your legal obligation."
"You're not a banker."
"That's a triumph of deduction."
"So what are you?"
"A guy who wants a check," Reacher said, "for $20,000.
"You represent those people?"
He started to stand up. Reacher put his arm out straight and shoved him back in his chair, hard enough to hurt.
"Sit still," he said. "Why are you doing this?"
"Because I'm a compassionate guy," Reacher said. "That's why. There's a family in trouble here. They're going to be upset and worried all winter long. Disaster staring them in the face. Never knowing which day is going to bring everything crashing down around them. I don't like to see people living that way, whoever they are."
"They don't like it. They should get back to Mexico, where they belong."
Reacher glanced at him, surprised.
"I'm not talking about them," he said. "I'm talking about you, your family."
"My family?"
Reacher nodded.
"I stay mad at you. They'll all suffer. A car wreck here, a mugging there. You might fall down the stairs, break your leg. Or your wife might. The house might catch on fire. Lots of accidents, one after the other. You'll never know when the next one is coming. It'll drive you crazy. You couldn't get away with it. I'm getting away with it right now. I could start today. With you. Brewer said nothing.
Give me that pitcher, Reacher said. Brewer hesitated a moment. Then he picked it up and held it out like an automaton. Reacher took it. It was fancy crystal with a cut pattern. Maybe Waterford. Maybe imported all the way from Ireland. It held a quart and probably cost $1,000. He balanced it on his palm and sniffed its contents. Lemonade. Then he tossed it over the edge of the balcony. Yellow liquid arced out through the air, and a second later there was a loud crash from the patio below.
Oops, he said. I'll have you arrested, Brewer said. That's criminal damage.
Maybe I'll start with one of your sons, Reacher said. Pick one out at random and throw him off the balcony. Just like that.
I'll have you arrested, Brewer said again.
Why? According to you, what the legal system says doesn't matter. Or does that only apply to you? Maybe you think you're something special.
Brewer said nothing. Reacher stood up and picked up his chair and threw it over the rail. It crashed and splintered on the stone below.
Give me the check, he said. You can afford it. You're a rich man. You just got through telling me.
It's a matter of principle, Brewer said. They shouldn't be here.
And you should?
Why? They were here first.
They lost to us.
And now you're losing to me. What goes around comes around.
He bent down and picked up the silver bell from the table. It was probably an antique, maybe French. The cup part was engraved with filigree patterns, maybe 2.5 inches in diameter. He held it with his thumb on one side and all 4 fingers on the other, squeezed hard, and crushed it out of shape. Then he transferred it into his palm and squashed the metal flat. Leaned over and shoved it in Brewer's shirt pocket.
I could do that to your head, he said.
Brewer made no reply.
Give me the check, Reacher said quietly, before I lose my damn temper.
Brewer paused. 5 seconds. 10. Then he sighed.
Okay, he said.
He led the way into the study and over to the desk. Reacher stood behind him. He didn't want any revolvers appearing suddenly out of drawers. Make it out to cash, he said. Brewer wrote the check. He got the date right, he got the amount right, and he signed it.
Better not bounce, Reacher said.
It won't, Brewer said.
It does. You do, too.
Off the patio. I hope you rot in hell.
Reacher folded the check into his pocket and found the way out to the upstairs foyer, went down the stairs, and walked over to the grandfather clock, tilted it forward until it overbalanced. It fell like a tree and smashed on the floor and stopped ticking. The 2 men exfiltrated after nearly 3 hours. The heat was too brutal to stay longer, and they didn't really need to. Nobody was going anywhere, that was clear. The old woman and her son stayed mostly in the house. The kid was hanging around in the barn, coming out now and then until the son drove her back inside. Once, walking slowly back to the house when the maid called her to come and eat. So they gave it up and crawled north in the lee of the rocks and came out to wait on the dusty shoulder as soon as they were out of sight of the house. The woman in the Crown Vic turned up right on time. She had the air blasting and water in bottles. They drank the water and made their report.
Okay, the woman said. So I guess we're ready to make our move.
I guess we are, the dark man said.
Sooner the better,
the fair man agreed. Let's get it done. Reacher put the plates back on the old LeBaron as soon as he was out of sight of the brewer house. Then he drove straight back to Pecos and reclaimed Alice Aaron's VW from the mechanics. He paid them their $40 without complaint, but afterward he wasn't really sure they had done anything to the car. The clutch felt just as sharp as it had before. He stalled out twice on the way back to the legal mission. He left it in the lot behind the building with the maps and the handgun in the glove compartment where he had found them, entered the old store from the front, and found Alice at her desk in back. She was on the phone and busy with clients. There was a whole family group in front of her, three generations of quiet, anxious people. She had changed her clothes. Now she was wearing black, high-waisted pants made out of some kind of thin cotton or linen, and a black jacket to match. The jacket made the white sports bra look like a shirt. The whole thing looked very formal. Instant attorney. She saw him and put her hand over the phone and excused herself from her clients. She twisted away from them, and he leaned down next to her.
We've got big problems,
she said quietly.
Hack Walker wants to see you.
Me? He said. Why?
Better you hear it from him.
Hear what? Did you meet with him? She nodded.
I went right over. We talked for a half hour.
And? What did he say?
Better you hear it from him,
she said again.
We can talk about it later, okay?
There was worry in her voice. He looked at her. She turned back to the phone. The family in front of her desk leaned forward to catch her words. He took the $20,000 check out of his pocket and unfolded it and smoothed it on the desktop. She saw it and stopped talking, put her hand over the phone again, took a deep breath.
Thanks,
she said. Now there was embarrassment in her voice, like maybe she had reconsidered her end of the bargain. He dropped her car keys on the desk and walked back out to the sidewalk, turned right, and headed for the courthouse. The Pecos County District Attorney's Office occupied the whole of the courthouse's second floor. There was an entry door from the stairwell that led to a narrow passage that passed through a wooden gate into an open area used as a secretarial pen. Beyond that were three doors leading into three offices, one for the DA and one for each of the assistants. All the interior walls separating the offices from the pen and from each other were glass from the waist up. They had old-fashioned Venetian blinds covering the glass, with wide wooden slats and cotton tapes. The whole place looked cramped and out of date. There were air conditioners in every external window. They were all set on high, and their motors put a deep, booming tone into the structure of the walls. The secretarial pen had two cluttered desks, both of them occupied, the farther one by a middle-aged woman who looked like she belonged there, the nearer one by a young man who could have been an intern working his summer vacation from college. Clearly, he doubled as the office receptionist, because he looked up with a bright, "How may we help you?" expression on his face.
Hack Walker wants to see me, Reacher said.
Mr. Reacher?
The kid asked. Reacher nodded, and the kid pointed to the corner office.
He's expecting you, he said.
Reacher threaded his way through the cluttered space to the corner office. The door had a window with an acetate plaque below it. The plaque read, Henry F. W. Walker, District Attorney. The window was covered on the inside by a closed blind. Reacher knocked once and went in without waiting for a reply.
The office had a window on each wall and a mess of filing cabinets and a big desk piled with paper and a computer and three telephones. Walker was in his chair behind it, leaning back, holding a photograph frame in both hands. It was a small wooden thing with a fiberboard tongue on the back that would prop it upright on a desk or a shelf. He was staring at the front of it, some kind of serious distress on his face.
"What can I do for you?" Reacher asked.
Walker transferred his gaze from the photograph.
"Sit down," he said.
"Please." The hearty politician's boom had gone from his voice. He sounded tired and ordinary. There was a client chair in front of the desk. Reacher picked it up and turned it sideways to give himself some legroom.
"What can I do for you?" he asked again.
"You ever had your life turned upside down overnight?"
Reacher nodded. "Now and then."
Walker propped the photograph on the desk sideways, so it was visible to both of them. It was the same color shot he had seen in Sloop Greer's closet. The three young men leaning on the old pickup's fender, good friends, intoxicated with youth, on the cusp of infinite possibilities.
"Me and Sloop and Al Eugene," he said. "Now, Al's a missing person, and Sloop is dead."
"No word on Eugene?" Walker shook his head.
"Not a thing."
Reacher said nothing.
"We were such a threesome,"
Walker said.
"And you know how that goes. Isolated place like this, you get to be more than friends. It was us against the world."
"Was Sloop his real name?" Walker looked up.
"Why do you ask?"
"Because I thought yours was Hack, but I see from the sign on your door it's Henry." Walker nodded and smiled a tired smile.
"It's Henry on my birth certificate. My folks call me Hank. Always did. But I couldn't say it as a youngster when I was learning to talk. It came out Hack. It kind of stuck."
"But Sloop was for real?" Walker nodded again.
"It was Sloop Greer, plain and simple."
"So what can I do for you?" Reacher asked for the third time.
"I don't know, really," Walker said.
"Maybe just listen a while? Maybe clarify some things for me?"
"What kind of things?"
"I don't know, really," Walker said again.
"Like, when you look at me, what do you see?"
"A district attorney."
"And?"
"I'm not sure." Walker was quiet for a spell.
"You like what you see?"
he asked. Reacher shrugged.
"Less and less, to be honest."
"Why?"
"Because I come in here and find you getting all misty-eyed over your boyhood friendship with a crooked lawyer and a wife beater."
Walker looked away.
"He certainly comes straight to the point. Life's too short not to."
There was silence for a second, just the dull roar of all the air conditioner motors rising and falling as they slipped in and out of phase with each other.
"Actually, I'm three things," Walker said. "I'm a man, I'm a DA, and I'm running for judge."
"So?"
"Al Eugene isn't a crooked lawyer. Far from it. He's a good man. He's a campaigner, and he needs to be. Fact is, structurally, the state of Texas is not big on protecting the rights of the accused. The indigent accused? Even worse. You know that because you had to find a lawyer for Carmen yourself, and that can only be because
you were told she wouldn't get a court appointment for months. And the lawyer you found must have told you she's still looking at months and months of delay. It's a bad system, and I'm aware of it, and Al is aware of it. The Constitution guarantees access to counsel, and Al takes that promise very seriously. He makes himself available to anybody who can find his door. He gives them fair representation, whoever they are. Inevitably, some of them are bad guys. But don't forget, the Constitution applies to bad guys, too. But most of his clients are okay. Most of them are just poor, is all. Black or white or Hispanic. Reacher said nothing. So let me take a guess, Walker said. I don't know where you heard Al called crooked, but a buck gets 10, it was from an older white person with money or position. It was Rusty Greer, Reacher thought. Don't tell me who, Walker said. But 10 gets 100, I'm right. A person like that sees a lawyer sticking up for poor people or colored people, and they regard it as a nuisance or as an unpleasantness, and then as some kind of treachery against their race or their class. And from there on, it's a pretty easy jump to calling it crooked. Okay, Reacher said. Maybe I'm wrong about Eugene. I guarantee you're wrong about him. I guarantee you could go back to the very day he passed the bar exam and not find any crooked behavior, anywhere at all. He placed his fingernail on the photograph just below Al Eugene's chin. He's my friend, he said, and I'm happy about that, as a man and as a DA. What about Sloop Greer? Walker nodded. We'll get to that. But first, let me tell you about being a DA. What's to tell? Same kind of stuff. I'm like Al. I believe in the Constitution and the rule of law and impartiality and fairness. I can absolutely guarantee you could turn this office upside down and never find one single case where I've been less than fair and impartial. I've been tough, sure, and I've sent lots of people to prison, and some of them to death row, but I've never done anything if I wasn't absolutely convinced it was right. Sounds like a stump speech, Reacher said, but I'm not registered to vote. I know, Walker said. I checked. Finally, that's why I'm talking like this. If this was politics, it would be too hokey for words. But this is for real. I want to be a judge, because I could do some good. You familiar with how things work in Texas? Not really. Judges in Texas are all elected. They have a lot of power. And it's a weird state. A lot of rich people, but a lot of poor people, too. The poor people need court-appointed lawyers, obviously. But there's no public defender system in Texas, so the judges choose the poor people's lawyers for them. They just pick them out from any old law firm they want. They're in control of the whole process. They determine the fees, too. It's patronage, pure and simple. So, who is the judge going to appoint? He's going to appoint somebody who contributed to his election campaign. It's about cronyism, not fitness or talent. The judge hands out $10,000 of taxpayer money to some favored law firm. The law firm assigns some incompetent lackey who puts in $100 worth of work, the net result being $9,900 unearned profit for the law firm. and some poor guy in jail for something he maybe didn't do. Most defense lawyers meet their clients for the first time at the start of the trial, right there in the courtroom. We've had drunk lawyers and lawyers who fall asleep at the defense table. They don't do any work. They don't check anything. Like the year before I got here, some guy was on trial for the rape of a child. He was convicted and went to prison for life. Then some pro bono operation like you went and proved the guy had actually been in jail at the time the rape happened. In jail, Reacher. 50 miles away, awaiting trial for stealing a car. There was paperwork from here to there, proving it beyond any doubt, all of it in black and white in the public record. His first lawyer never even checked. Not too good, Reacher said. So I do two things, Walker said. First, I aim to become a judge so I can help to put things right in the future. Second, right now, right here in the DA's office, we act out both sides. Every single time one of us assembles the prosecution case and another of us does the defense's work, and tries to tear it down. We work real hard at it, because we know nobody else will, and I couldn't sleep nights if we didn't. Carmen Greer's defense is rock solid, Reacher said. Hack Walker looked down at the desk.
No.
The Greer situation is a nightmare, he said. It's a total disaster always around. For me personally, as a man, as a DA, and as a candidate for a judgeship. You have to recuse yourself. Walker looked up. Of course I'll recuse myself. No doubt about that. But it's still personal to me. And I'm still in overall charge. Whatever happens, it's still my office. And that'll have repercussions for me. You want to tell me what your problem is? Don't you see? Sloop was my friend, and I'm an honest prosecutor. So in my heart and in my head, I want to see justice done. But I'm looking at sending a Hispanic woman to death row. I do that, I can forget about the election. Can't I? This county is heavily Hispanic. But I want to be a judge, because I could do some good, and asking for the death penalty against a minority woman now will stop me dead. Not just here. It will be headline news everywhere. Can you imagine? What's the New York Times going to say? They already think we're dumb, redneck barbarians who marry our own cousins. It'll follow me the rest of my life. So don't prosecute her. It wouldn't be justice anyhow, because it was self-defense, pure and simple. She got you convinced of that? It's obvious. I wish it was obvious. I'd give my right arm. For the first time in my career, I'd twist and turn to make this go away. Reacher stared at him. You don't need to twist and turn, do you? Let's talk it through, Walker said. Step by step, right from the beginning. The spousal abuse defense can work, but it has to be white heat, spur-of-the-moment stuff, you understand? That's the law. There can't be premeditation. And Carmen premeditated like crazy. That's a fact. And it won't go away. She bought the gun more or less immediately when she heard he was coming home. The paperwork comes through this office eventually, so I know that's true. She was ready and waiting to ambush him. Reacher said nothing. I know her. Walker said.
Obviously, I know her. Sloop was my friend, so I've known her as long as he did, near enough.
And? Walker shrugged miserably.